I did want to talk again about a life lesson from the Gospels. And we've been reading Luke as a church. It's pretty amazing to read through the Gospels and take life lessons that we get out of it. These are things we can apply to our own lives. There's so much to take out of it. I don't know if you've had a chance to read through Luke. I hope you have. We've been doing it in life groups and small church, but I've found it fantastic, and there's so much. We're doing like four chapters a week at the minute. There's so much to take out of it, and I'm actually going to be speaking tonight on two verses out of that four chapters. So there's heaps you could take. It's almost like, wow, what are we going to take out? So, you know, I hope that we're inspired to really see God at work through his gospel and to see how it can apply in our own lives. But one of the things I want to do is, when I grew up, I want to show you this slide. We'll go to the first one. I don't know, did anybody else watch read Asterix comics growing up? Oh, you did? Okay. Well, you guys will know this. This is in a big meal, and normally Obelix would eat a whole boar, and yeah, or two or four, yeah, exactly. And they'd have this big celebration. For those of you who know who the kind of story, they'd always go and take on the Romans and win somehow with their magic potion and then celebrate in the village. And the guy tied up on the tree, his name's, what's Cacophonix? Cacophonix? He was the bard, the village bard, the singer who could never sing. So they always tied him up so he wouldn't sing for them. But, you know, feasts are something to celebrate. Everyone here would love a feast, wouldn't they? A good banquet. Who loves going out and eating at a good restaurant? I was in Sydney this week and ate at a really great restaurant. And there's just something about it, especially when you're eating with friends and family and people you know. I want to tell you about my favourite restaurant in the world, though. And I'm actually about to go back to this part of the world in 2 weeks, into Northern Africa. But there's this restaurant called The Carnivore. Now, show me this young Zach. Next slide, mate. Oops, coming. Yeah, here it is. Now, I don't know if you can see very well, but this is an amazing restaurant. It's a big restaurant, and they're one of the only places in the world that serves game meat. That means you can eat elephant, crocodile, giraffe, whatever they've got going on, rhino, the whole thing. This is in Kenya, and they have this massive big fire pit in the middle of the room, and they're all skewers of like legs of the animals that they're cooking. sorry, E. We're about to go there, sweetie. And when I was there, I had impala. By the way, if you get a chance to eat impala, those little cute things that bounce around the paddocks, amazing, amazing. You can eat anything. And anyway, what they do, next slide, thanks, Zach, is they bring it on your table. It's a sort of restaurant where there's no salad. There's nothing like that. They just literally bring these big skewers and carve it off onto your plate. A bit like a Brazilian barbecue if you've ever had it. And let me tell you, it's a pretty cool way to go. Yeah, this is a photo. They just carve it off, and you have in the middle a big thing of sauces that you can add to your meat, and that's all you eat. So that's my favourite restaurant in the world. I'm sure we've all got different favourite spots to eat. I don't know if you've seen, there's some spots in the world you can eat under an ocean, you can eat in all extraordinary sort of ways. But in Luke, for those of us who have been reading chapter 14, Jesus talks about a pretty extraordinary feast, a pretty extraordinary banquet. He actually talks about three. So the first one, his first story is one that it's probably not the most known one, but it's an important one. It says, if you're going to go to a feast, sit at the back, essentially, the back of the room. Don't go and sit at the best seat because someone might say, hey, you shouldn't be sitting there. Sit at the back of the room and it's at the front. I'd always done is I'd skipped sort of kind of to the next story, which is a third story about a feast, which is that one where the master invites people who aren't the religious elite, because all the people who he did invite didn't turn up. So he invites the sick people and the poor and the people who are on the out of society. So I think a lot of us who've been, you know, read scripture and grown up with that would know that story. But there's one tucked in the middle that is really amazing. And I'm going to get Lisi, my little girl, to come up and read this for us. This is an extraordinary banquet, an extraordinary feast. So, Lise, I'm going to get you to read. I'll get a mic for you. By the way, Lisa's coming with me to Africa in 2 weeks. So we might go to that restaurant, darling. Okay. Rightio. This is from, we're going to read from the Message again, but this is from Luke chapter 14, verse 12 to 14. So read along if you've got a Bible.
Then he turned to the host. The next time you put on a dinner. Don't just invite your friends and family and rich neighbours, the kind of people who will return the favour. Invite some people who never get invited out, the misfits from the wrong side of the tracks. You'll be and experience a blessing. They won't be able to return the favour, but the favour will be returned. Oh, how it will be returned. As the resurrection of God's people.
Yeah, give her a clap. So two verses. This is extraordinary, more extraordinary than eating elephant in Kenya. Well, that's pretty extraordinary. It's not very tasty, by the way. This is extraordinary that when we put on a dinner or when we invite people who don't fit in. Don't invite people who are our family or friends because they might thank us for it. Invite people who'll never thank you. It's an extraordinary thought. This is what I love about Jesus' teaching. It's so countercultural, so different to just how the world goes about living its life, how we would live our lives without having this teaching in our lives. Now, Jesus wasn't really just talking about... could have done autoplay. I love it. Quick stop. Jesus wasn't just talking about practically what we do when we invite guests for dinner, of course. His talking about how we live our lives. And it's a huge challenge to us. Do we only surround ourselves by friends and people who are fun to be around? Do we only surround ourselves by people who contribute into our lives? Sort of vivacious and exciting to be around? Or do we do as Jesus said and make sure that we have those people who don't really fit into society? And the Message version of the Bible calls them the misfits. And that's what I've called tonight's message is, are you missing the misfits? And this has been a huge challenge in my life because I think, well, yes, often I do. I'm missing misfits in my own life. So the question is for me as much as anything else, but are you missing misfits in your own life? Think about it. In a normal week, with what you do and what, you know, well, some of us have university, some of us have work, jobs, different things that we have to do, have we made room for misfits? I mean, it's pretty clear that Jesus says, do it. That verse is even stronger than just say, make some room. It's actually saying, make all your room for misfits. Now, we know that you take it in context, and that's not the entire emphasis of this, but it's a pretty strong challenge. Do we make room for misfits? So I wanted to come up with some excuses why we don't. And I've probably been guilty of making up these excuses over the years and still am. So we're all learning this together. But excuse number one, I've got five excuses, and we might all make these up in our own lives from time to time. I don't know any people who are misfits. Who's ever sort of said that? We don't know anybody. I'm not hanging around people. Well, I'm really inspired, and I've talked about this guy a lot of times, but I've just been with him in Newcastle for 3 days. Kent from Tasmania, this guy, this church in Tasmania that really reached out to people and saw a whole lot of people come to know Jesus and are still seeing that. And I always ask him, Kent, how have you done it? What have you done? He just says, it's simple. I look for those people who are on the out in society. Not just the people who are poor, he goes, I look for the people who are up and out and down and out. So there's often rich people are really out. You know, they don't have friends, their life isn't going well, they've got certain pressures. So he looks for people who are up and out and down and out. You know, one of the reasons we've structured our church into life groups is so that we can be reminded and challenged on this every single week. That's why when we're doing the wheel and we're talking about evangelism, it's as much as anything else is, are you looking out for those people who are misfits? And I'd like to encourage us for the life group leaders that are here, it's a good question to ask in that evangelism thing as we go around the wheel. It's a practical thing. Are we looking out for people who are misfits? People who really need to be looked out for, the down and out and the up and outs. Excuse number two, I don't have any time. Well, that's an excuse I've used a lot in the past, and I think we've all probably been guilty of that. About our reward being in heaven, that if we invite misfits, people who don't fit into society, people who are struggling in life, people who won't contribute to us, we won't get any reward now, but our reward is in heaven. And, you know, we can just so easily sort of think of that, but If I was to say, Josh, you're going to get, you know, I know you're busy at the moment. Now, this guy, talk of time, he's doing his last whatever it is for his engineering degree, some big thing, but I know he's busy. Been too busy to work, and that's saying something for Josh because he's a hard worker. You know, but if I said to Josh, Josh, mate, at the end of the week, I know you're busy, but you're going to be able to collect $1 million, and all you have to do is just put a little bit of time in the week to doing it, I reckon you'd find time to do it, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yes.
And this is Mr. Busy. Well, what more is our riches in heaven? What more is our riches in heaven? We can always make time. We can always fit it in. So I encourage you, it's all about priorities, to be honest. And actually, as we go about our day-to-day life, we'll find misfits everywhere. It's not just looking for the people who are begging in a street, so to speak. It's people who you just need to stop and give them some more time. It's people you may need to pray for because they're unwell. There's misfits everywhere. Excuse number three, I'm just focused on my family. This has been a big thing for myself and Melly, actually, because when you've got four kids and our fifth's on the way in January, isn't it? I always get the date wrong. Five kids in, you get a bit lax on dates when they're due. January. Yep. Is that... It is five. No, I'm just joking. Anyway, what was I saying? Where did I go on that? Oh, yeah. Am I just focused on family? I mean, family's really important. And in many ways, for me, family's my main priority, more than the church. Not more than God, but more than people outside of my family. But, you know, there's one thing that I've learned is that by looking out for others, by having a bigger picture and a bigger perspective, that really blesses our family. And in fact, if you didn't do that, you wouldn't be doing the right thing for your own family. So that's definitely been a challenge to us this year. Excuse number four, I'm a misfit. So if you feel yourself as a misfit, not fitting into society, so why do you have to look out for other misfits? I've heard this excuse all the time in different types of language things. You know, I'm just having a tough time and you know, I've got no friends, and people all self-absorbed about themselves, or they're struggling with things in life. Misfit at the lookout for others. My question is, are you being generous? Practically, when you have a conversation with somebody, we're a church about evangelism, so we're wanting to meet new people. Ask people questions about themselves. Think when you're in a conversation that it's not all about you. Just keep asking questions. It's actually pretty easy to have a conversation. Even if you feel you're a misfit, you don't know how to talk to somebody, just ask some questions about themselves. It's not actually that hard, and it's really, really helpful. The other one is, always offer to help people. Even if you're feeling like a misfit yourself, always offer to help in a range of different things. But if you ask people a lot of questions and offer to help, then that's some practical things to be able to look out for misfits. Excuse number four, life is really difficult for me. We're going through a tough time in life, so an excuse not to reach out to misfits. I've heard, you know, I'm hardly coping myself, so I don't have room for others. Well, I want to share a little story here, and this is the last sort of excuse that I'm bringing up. Many years ago, myself and Mel were just married, and this actually isn't a story about us, but we're only just, when I was preparing this little message, remembered this. Some of you know we used to run Easterfest, and so we had this opportunity to meet a lot of people in that time, and we decided to bring in somebody who wasn't well known at all then. His name was Nick, and Nick stayed with us for a week when we had a little townhouse just over in Newtown. And Nick was a bit of a misfit, to be honest, at the time. I'm not sure he'd describe himself as that, but it was difficult. There were some challenges. He had a pretty big physical disability. A lot of you will know him because he's famous around the world now, but he was born with no arms and legs. Nick, I never could... How do you say his last name? He stayed with us for a week. Nick Vucic. And, you know, we were able to help him, actually gave him his first tour where he went around to high schools. Pretty extraordinary because, you know, he just ministers to millions of people on TV all over the world and things these days. And we don't know him anymore. We've lost contact. It was sort of a little era of our lives. You know, Nick himself had some pretty big excuses why not to be able to minister out and to think of others and to give. Probably bigger excuses than any single one of us would have in this room. Now, I know our own lives have our own challenges and the difficulties, and you can't grade all that. No one knows what everyone else is going through, but being born with no arms and no legs is about as bad as it gets, I reckon. Wouldn't you agree? Maybe there's worse. Video. Those of you who don't know Nick, this is him now. Just turned up a bit down.
I was born in Melbourne, Australia, 1982, and my parents had no idea that I was going to be born without arms or legs. I was the only one that they ever saw without limbs. My faith in Jesus Christ was sealed after 7 years of wondering why, God, I was born this way. He answered me very clearly through John chapter 9. And I gave my life to Jesus at 15 after reading about how he came across a man who was born blind. And I'm like, hey, hold on a second, this is interesting. And no one knew why he was born that way. I'm like, perfect. So I read on, and in verse 3 of the 9th chapter, Jesus said, it was done so that the works of God would be revealed through him. I'm like, wow, God, if you had a plan for the blind man, you do have a plan for me. And that was the beginning of my personal relationship with Jesus. Youth groups were starting to call me, churches were starting to call me, opportunities were opening up everywhere for me to share my testimony. I was speaking in front of 300 sophomore public high school students. 3 minutes into it, half the girls were crying. One girl in the middle of the room started weeping. She put up her hand and she said, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but can I come up there and give you a hug? In front of everyone, she came and she hugged me. She cried on my shoulder and whispered in my ear, no one's ever told me that they love me. No one's ever told me that I'm beautiful the way that I am. I couldn't believe it. It changed my life. At that moment, I knew God was ministering to her through me. It's not by my speech or my power, it was God. And my heart was ignited with passion. And it was an awesome day to see one soul transformed forever. That was when I knew I was called to be a worldwide evangelist. From university campuses, 40,000 students in China, to India, where we're talking to sex slaves, to crowds in the jungle of India, 110,000 people, down to Indonesia and all of Southeast Asia, to speaking at congresses of nations like Colombia and Costa Rica, where you see the leaders of that nation commit that country to the Lord Jesus. To Korea, speaking to the next generation about depression and suicide, and to Eastern Europe, where we did Serbia, Slovenia, and Croatia. Then doors in the Middle East, the message of hope was spread throughout the whole Arab world. That is God. And we know we've just begun. Yeah. By the grace of God, we have seen face to face half a million souls say yes to Jesus and be plugged into a local.
So it keeps going. It's a promo for his thing. But isn't that amazing? Some of you might have seen Nick speak. But to see that impact that a guy with no arms and legs can have, reaching out to people. Let me say, when he talks about suffering and pain, and people listen and really connects with them. But you know, it was, I don't know how many years ago, Mel, we're just married, I think, where we did life for 1 week with Nick, and in our home, and then taking him around. You know, amazing testimony from where he's gone. But I just think, you know, all of us are doing life together in our church, more than just a week. Probably none of us have the same disabilities. We've all got huge challenges, some of us. But certainly extraordinary things that Nick's had. And yet, you know, our God's bigger than all that. And we mustn't use it as an excuse that just because of the difficult things we have in our own lives, that we're not able to look out for people. Yeah? Oh, were you? Oh, really? That's it. Awesome, Mel. Yeah, wow, love it. Oh, were you? A few of you were. Yeah, here. Okay. Yeah, amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and as I said, you know, we did life with Nick for a week. And look, he, you know, he was confident on stage, but behind the scenes, it was pretty challenging, to be honest. I hope we can all do life, and who knows where God's going to take us all. Some of us have, you know, real challenges in health and different things in our life and family and all of that. But, you know, this challenge from Luke chapter 14, verse 12 to 14, whereas, are there misfits in your life? Are we missing them? Are they there? By the look of that photo, there's a whole lot of misfits in that photo. Oh, no, that's all the Hamilton small church. But I think, you know, it'd be good just to have a bit of time of self-reflection. I don't know if you guys have a phone here. Some of the kids may not have phones yet, so you can just think about things or write them down if you've got a bit of paper. But can we just have a couple of minutes? We pull out our phone, open notes, and just, or whatever you have, if you've got one of those Androids, and just write down, answer that question. Are you, am I missing the misfits? And who in your life would you see as a misfit, people who need reaching out? They're the sort of people who suck energy out of you and never going to be able to give back, and it's all give, 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 give. But consider that prayerfully. Some of you might have a whole lot of names. Myself and Mel were talking today actually about one person in our lives that's really a misfit for us, and that we need to find ways to love this person more. So think about it. Who are the misfits in your life? Let's give you a couple of minutes to think about that. While you continue to consider this, you know, Jesus said it's harder for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. Part of that is that when you have a lot of material wealth, you're so distracted with that and life is going so well, and why do you need anything else? You know, for those people though who life's going really difficult, where things are a struggle, might be issues of health or finances or family situation or a range of things, there is just like this, that's why we follow Jesus. It's a life lesson from the Gospels, because this is exactly what Jesus did. You think of the stories of where he looked out for the prostitute or the adulterer or the misfits around him. And we're wanting to follow Jesus. Our church is all about that. It's our most important aspect of Just Church is following Jesus. But we're also passionate about evangelism and seeing people come to know Jesus. Well, let me tell you, these two are totally linked, because in following Jesus, who looked out for misfits more than anybody, if we really do follow Jesus in that, then we really will see fruit. And my mate Kent in Tasmania has literally seen now 600 people come to know Jesus who had absolutely no background in it. Extraordinary, almost unprecedented in Australia. And what did he do? He looked for the down and outs and the up and outs. So I hope that's an encouragement for all of us. We can cruise along in life without doing that. I've listed 5 excuses. Maybe you can think of others, but let's follow Jesus together. Let's consider this question. Are we looking out for the misfits? Are we missing them? Because if we are, let's do something about it. Just got one last little encouragement is we do life together in Just Church, and that's why life groups are so important. Because it's about doing life together. So I encourage you, if you're not in a life group, make sure you participate regularly and get in one, and ask anybody here and we'll get you into a life group if you're not part of it. But this question on evangelism really encourages us to ask each other, how are we going on this issue? And you've all written down little things in your phone. I'm not going to get anyone to share publicly or whatever tonight, but they're great things to share in life group. Pray for these people. Get the people in your life group to pray with you for those people, how that you might be able to reach out to to the misfits.